Hello, and welcome to another episode of Famous Failures, where I interview the world's most interesting people about the failures they've had in their lives and what they learned from them. I'm your host, Ozan Morol. Before I introduce today's guest, I have a request from you. The podcast is fairly new, so I would really appreciate your help in spreading the word. You can do that in one of three ways. You can tell your friends about the podcast, you can subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform that you're listening on, or you can leave a review on iTunes or Google Play. In addition, if you'd like to keep in touch with me and say hello to me, you can subscribe to my weekly newsletter, The Weekly Contrarian. It has thousands of subscribers, and readers call it the one email I look forward to each week. So every Thursday, you'll get a list of tools, articles, books, and other gems that challenge conventional wisdom and change the way that you look at the world. You can sign up for that by going to my website, ozanmorol.com, or texting my first name, Ozan, O-Z-A-N, to 345-345. And if you sign up now, you'll also get a free ebook called The Contrarian Handbook, 8 Principles for Innovating Your Thinking. And again, you can get that right now on the go by texting O-Z-A-N to 345-345 or heading over to my website, ozanmorol.com. This week's guest on Famous Failures is Bea Arthur. Bea has used her tenacity and creativity to become a successful therapist, entrepreneur, and media personality. She's employed her clinical training to develop innovative companies in the mental health sphere, including a company called In Your Corner, and her brand new company, The Difference, which uses machine learning to modernize mental health services. As a celebrated woman in tech, she's been a TEDx speaker, a Forbes writer, and the first Black woman admitted to Y Combinator, the world's most prestigious startup incubator. This conversation was probably one of the most honest and raw that I've ever featured on the podcast. We cover a wide variety of subjects, including how you can view your failures as stepping stones, why too much strategizing can be to your detriment, and how to stay true to yourself as you build your company. I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did.
Okay, so I actually spent a good part of the morning just reading about your numerous accomplishments. So you're a successful therapist, entrepreneur, media personality. You were named part of the New Guard for Women in Tech by Marie Claire magazine, an entrepreneur to bet on by Newsweek. You know, you spoke for TEDx before. So many accomplishments, but what about failures? So what have been some of the most valuable failures that you've had in your life?
The most valuable failure was definitely the most recent one. So I'm mostly known for my last company. I'm about to actually launch my third company on Wednesday. We're doing our private beta on Wednesday. And that came about because of my last company failed. And it's funny, too, because the company In Your Corner was my last company. And that company was born because of my first company's failure. So, like, everything has been an evolution for sure. I always tell people, like, don't consider it a failure. Consider it partly like a stepping stone because, like, you know, when I started my first company, I was, 24, 25? I just got done with grad school. And, like, where I am now, like, I wouldn't have been able to do any of that if I hadn't, like, learned those lessons, you know, in my case, the hard way. But, like, you know, all of it brought me to where I am now, which is a really good place. So In Your Corner was one of the first online therapy companies to kind of shift the service online. And I got the idea for it in 2009. Let me start from the beginning because it really is like a whole evolution. So my very first company was called Me Time, and our tagline was Little Escapes from Your Little Ones. And I came up with that concept because while I was in grad school, I babysat like part-time. And I worked with a lot of women, primarily on the Upper East Side, women who were like, you know, had waited to have their kids, very accomplished women. And I started to notice that whenever they came back from wherever they were at, they always wanted me to hang out later. And I was just kind of like, wow, do you miss adult company? You know, and I just feel like for some, especially accomplished women, you know, you accomplish all that stuff and you decide to have kids. And then you're kind of like at the mercy of this like really demanding blob. And so I was just kind of like, it's really interesting that, you know, like before you were a mom, you were an adult and, you know, people are always marketing to the mom. And so I got the idea for Me Time. I wanted it to be on-site childcare with like a grown-up play days, like trapeze lessons and cocktail making, just to remember the woman inside of the mother. And I actually, you know, I did my thesis on it at Columbia. I got my first investor from another part-time job I had. And I graduated, though, in 2008, which is when the market crashed. And like I said, these were Upper East Side moms. And all of the women that I was targeting were the wives of all the men who had just been laid off. Mm. so that failure was kind of fast and furious. You know, my investor was like, well, it was a good idea, but it's a bad time. And I was like, no, I'm going to do it anyway. And I did. I tried to scale it down and make it events and, you know, spend all this money and just got super broke. And I had to go get a regular job. And I was like, so depressed. And the thing was, because it was my first company, like I made everybody who I talked to sign an NDA, which I now I know is total bullshit. Like it was very like played my cards really close to the chest. And I hadn't told anybody about it, like except my family. So when it died, you know, very sudden, like sad death, it was like, I had nobody to talk to about it. And I remember thinking like, God, like, I just want to get over this and get on with my life. I should do therapy. And keep in mind, I had just graduated grad school for counseling and clinical psychology. All of my friends at the time were therapists, all my mentors were therapists, and I still didn't want to ask. I still found it hard to find a good therapist, you know, and I was like, damn, if I'm like a practitioner in this space and an advocate for this service, and it's hard for me to take the steps to get therapy, how hard is it for someone, you know, like doesn't even know that it's a good thing, you know, like there's so many barriers to entry. So that failure ended up leading to my biggest joy, which was my last company. And we started out just being for women. Because I'll say the final lesson learned with me time was that, you know, even though it was a good idea, when I look back at it now, it was never going to work because, you know, I wasn't a mother. I just looked at that population and said, oh, this is something they could use. But now that I know actual young mothers, you know, if they had a free hour to themselves, they're not going to want to go and meet new friends. They're going to want to take a nap, you know, or catch up on laundry or Netflix or something. So it was good that that didn't work out, but what I took into a pretty padded room with my next company was that I really wanted to design an experience for exactly me. You know, like last time I was trying to provide a service, you know, a solution to something that may necessarily wasn't a problem. This time I am my target customer. So the company was called Pretty Padded Room. It was purple. It was an all-female staff. At the time, I was a domestic violence counselor. So most of our clients were women. We had an all-female staff. I love that vibe. Tagline was a nice place to go crazy because, you know, I just really hated like the clinical way therapy was always talked about. We put it online. We had video. In addition to video, we also had interactive journals. And so instead of $200 an hour, it was like $200 a month. That kind of took off pretty quickly. And I was still working at my job as a domestic violence counselor for the first year. And then we started getting press. I never had PR, just the idea started picking up. This was in 2011. And yeah, I've gotten all these like newsletters. I was in the New York Post. And I made my first mistake, which was thinking that press equals money and success, because I quit my job and I was just like, okay, I'm going to do this full time. But like, it's a really honorable thing to do nights and weekends until you can pay yourself, because then I had no money. You know, I was kind of desperate. When you're desperate, you make careless decisions, you know, because you're in a scarcity mindset. But things eventually picked up, you know, with Pretty Padded Room. I did a lot of business plan competitions. You know, we made lots of money. We ended up getting in 30 states. I did Y Combinator, where I was the first Black woman in Y Combinator. I did TED Talk off of that. And so that just became what I was known for. And after Y Combinator is actually, we rebranded to In Your Corner, which is primarily what it's known for by now. After YC, I kind of started doing things the startup way, you know, versus like, you know, like I said, I was broke and I needed the company to make money. It was my full-time job. So when I was doing it that way, it was literally, it had to be revenue first. You know, it was one foot in front of the other. I didn't spend anything that didn't get me a return. But when I went to the Valley and started doing things the startup way, they were like, oh no, you have to pay for your users. You have to hire all these engineers. You have to get office space. And that was kind of the beginning of the end. Like, it was kind of a blessing and a curse with Y Combinator, because even though it was like a major endorsement, it also, you know, like doing things the startup way isn't necessarily how you build a profitable business. But I got caught up and, you know, drank the Kool-Aid and, you know, spent all of our fundraising money. And then we ran out of funding in May of 2015. But, you know, it was my dream. Like, I mean, it was a very personal project because it came from a personal need and because I was known for it. It was like literally, it was the longest job I'd ever had. You know, I was done with grad school in 2000 when I was 25, and I started the company when I was 27. So it literally was like my life. And so I just couldn't see it ending, you know. So after we ran out of money, I laid off all the employees. And I kept the contractors, and I just stopped paying my rent to pay payroll. And I just eked it out for another 11 months, which I'm actually proud of. But, you know, to my detriment, I was broke. I got evicted. You know, it was like a really tough time. So we closed in April 2016. And so that's the In Your Corner story. So that's my biggest failure to date. But it ended up being another blessing because, you know, my mom told me at the time, she was like, you know, just because it didn't work out doesn't mean it didn't work. You know, like I started that company because, like, I knew what it was like to feel really lonely and not have the energy or the resources to read out to anybody and get help. And we did that for thousands of people, like in 30 countries. And I'm really, really proud of that. And like, you know, I started this space, you know, there's lots of other people who are just now coming up with this idea. I have that concept in 2010. A lot of my competitors tried to hire me. They bought my URL. That's how I got out of debt. I'm sorry. Like, I'm the godmother of that space, even though like, yes, it's a failure not to like put like too much of a like happy-go-lucky rainbow on it. But like, to me, it did more than what I thought it would do. Nobody can take any of that away from me. I'm extremely proud. I mean, it's like my baby, you know, like I can cry talking about it now. But now that the pain has subsided, I just only have fond memories and I'm really proud of the work we did there.
That's an amazing story. And it sounds like with MeTime, you're trying to help other people, but with Pretty Padded Room and In Your Corner, you're almost scratching your own itch. And that's one of the reasons why they became so successful. You seem to have just this incredible tenacity because just listening to your story now, I think most people would have quit after MeTime or would have quit after, you know, In Your Corner, but you seem to keep pushing forward. So how do you find that tenacity to keep pushing forward? How do you find the motivation to keep going in the face of failure?
Yeah, I mean, I'm about to do my third company next week, and I'm not going to lie, there's definitely been some hesitance. You know, even when I started Pretty Padded Room, it was like, at that point, I hadn't failed at anything. School's always been a breeze for me. Boys have always been a breeze for me. You know, so that was the first time I wanted something that didn't work out, you know, which is a really good lesson to learn early on because, you know, I meet a lot of people and I've seen a lot of, you know, fucked up business stories. And, you know, unfortunately, like, just because you work hard and are a good person doesn't mean things will work out and people won't screw you over or try to take what's yours. That happens, you know, and it just does because that's just how business is. People, you know, everybody wants to scramble to the top. So as far as my tenacity, I'll say, you know, my family is from Ghana and West Africa. Both of my parents are entrepreneurs. My older sister is an entrepreneur. You know, if you come from Africa, like Africa is a perfect place for the startup mindset because, you know, there's like very low infrastructure, you know, and the idea of like starting something and it being orderly just isn't a thing. You know, like if I walked into like a bureau and was like, here's my application for an LLC, like that paper isn't going anywhere. You know, like that's just how developing nations are, you know, so there's a lot of workarounds. Like, so naturally there's a by any means necessary kind of thing. Also, you know, I was raised with my parents. They started their company when I was 12, you know, so my mom and dad work on a lot. And it wasn't like this glamorous thing. It was just kind of like, okay, we're all going to go to Sam's. You know, this bill's going to be late, that bill's going to be late. It was just kind of this, you do what you have to do to make it work, you know, sometimes you have money, sometimes you don't. So it was never like this thing that I was scared of or was like, you know, a double dutch, like, should I try it now? I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. I'm going to do it. So I'll say that I'm really blessed to like have had a fearlessness. I just wasn't scared because like, I didn't know to be scared, you know? So that's why I always tell people like, don't do too much homework. Don't read too many podcasts. Just do it. You're going to learn. You can follow all the formulas you want, but like the unique power of execution is in you and the way you do things, you know? And so really like trust your instincts and, you know, just listen, you know, and like learn and pay attention, be flexible. Don't be too bullheaded. So with me, you know, I've always been very like open and honest about what I don't know, you know, like luckily I'm a therapist. I'm a conversationalist. I like to listen to people. And you know, what I've learned is that everybody looks good and feels good doing what they're good at. And, you know, so when I come to people and I ask for advice plainly, you know, like people love to share, at least that's been my experience. I've been very lucky that a lot of like top level people looked out for me and like met up, had coffee with me when I didn't know anything. Like when I think of some of the questions that I asked back then, and I, you know, I can't believe that some of these people didn't laugh in my face, but like Cindy Gallup is one of my first mentors, you know, Catherine Minshew, you know, like before I knew what a SaaS product was. You know, when I got into Y Combinator, I didn't even know what Y Combinator was. So when I say like fearless, it was because I didn't know better, you know? So my tenacity just comes from because I just want to do it, you know? And I don't consider the consequences, which, you know, I was kind of a bad kid. So that's maybe impulsivity. I don't know. All these traits are kind of like negative traits. But yeah, I just, you know, like, even with this, you know, In Your Corner closing was really tough. I mean, I was like really broken. Like 2016 is when we closed, but 2015 is when things were kind of dying and I had to let things go, especially because like after Y Combinator with the rebrand, I hired an awesome COO, you know, like we finally had money. It really seemed like we were going to make it. You know, we were just in NPR and MTV. And so the disappointment was like, oh my God, like so deep. You know, like I called the suicide hotline 4 times in 2015. You know, I always tell people that because, you know, like there's a lot of that that goes on in this field, but being an entrepreneur, being a boss is such an isolating experience. You know, you can't tell your employees, you know, you have to keep morale high. You can't tell your investors. They don't want to hear that shit, you know? And like, as far as like what's going on with your friends, they just see you on TV and they're just like, but you're doing so great. So it was a really lonely experience. My family and I got really close through that. And that's actually when I made a promise to myself. I was just like, well, I'm not going to like commit suicide because, like, you know, my family, well, what are they going to do? I don't want to make things harder for them because they were suffering with me, you know. Luckily, because I'm a therapist, I know that, you know, it wasn't that my body wanted to die. It was just that my mind wanted my problems to stop. So that's why I always tell people that, because, you know, just so everybody's been there. Everybody who lives this life has had really, really low lows where you just, you know, because the same level of like excitement and enthusiasm and creation, like you feel the exact opposite of that. Like there's a very wide range of emotion on this journey. So I'm always very open about how tough it is, how truly brutal it is. When I'm starting this new company, you know, I'm a lot more cautious. Now I am fearful. I'm not fearless at all. You know, and you know, your heart has a muscle memory, you know, like that was my baby. Like, I mean, it was a really tough time, especially after we closed. So I was just like, you know, it's kind of like getting a divorce and dating again. It's like, well, I know it could end really badly, but you know, this could be great, but I've lived through what it looks like when it doesn't work out, you know, but you know, it's just like, I want to do it anyway. And this time it's not so personal. Like, I'm really just curious about this new concept. I think it could be cool. I want to see it in the world. And if it doesn't work out, I'll be okay. But also I have all these lessons and luckily the professional detachment to be able to, you know, have more clarity so I don't make the kind of mistakes that I made last time.
Is your approach with this new company that you're launching up this week, is it any different from your experiences with Me Time in Your Corner and PD Padded Room in terms of like what you've learned from those failures and leveraging them into this new company?
Oh my God. I thank God every day for that pain and that struggle and like the being lost, all of that, because like, it's totally different. Like, first of all, with both two companies, you know, like I borrowed money from my family, you know, like I, you know, tried to do everything myself. This time, like I got a friends and family around. You know, what I didn't know is that people were, you know, nobody cares about the past. People are always looking for what you're going to do next. And I was surprised that, you know, I felt like a failure, but you know, all my investors were like, let us know what you do next. You know? So this time I was able to raise funds also. So in addition to like having the funding beneath me, so I'm not just having to like work all these jobs, I also am not going it alone this time. One of my biggest issues with the last company, and actually I guess to a certain extent with Me Time, was that I didn't have a technical co-founder, you know, so I always had to like look for people to do me favors or pay a lot of money to really shitty dev shops, or, and I had a really terrible CTO that I fired like twice and kept bringing him back because, but like, he's a big part of the reason that, you know, our sales like slowed down, just had all this technical debt, like nonstop. So this time, luckily I'm more plugged in from all everything I learned about coding. Like I am a non-technical founder, but everything I learned with the mistakes and watching how things can go wrong, now I can actually, you know, do a deployment schedule and manage a, you know, Trello board and do agile development and things like that. So now I have a CTO who is from the beginning, who is also a woman and is out at MIT, also went to Columbia, cares about the concept. You know, I raised the money like to fund her. So the biggest difference is that I'm being more intentional. Like I'm not, you know, I feel like with the last two companies, I definitely, it was a runaway train. Like I had this idea. I'm like, let's just see what happens. And then you spend a lot of time catching up instead of strategizing. So with this time, what we're launching next week is a private beta. We're just going to do the first 100 users. We already did a pilot, and we're going to learn from there and kind of iterate on the concept and the business requirements, and then we'll go out to do a full raise. So I definitely am more prepared and more like intentional this time around. And I wouldn't have known that, how valuable and necessary that was without, you know, having the calamity and chaos of the last two experiences. So the new concept is called The Difference, as in the right talk at the right time can make all the difference. And basically, it's a machine learning mental health startup. I always say it's 23andMe for mental health because basically the way it works is there's no therapist at all in the first session. We have like a series of questions either that we call a recap or a roadmap. And a recap gives you a really deep dive analysis into your personality and why you do the things you do. And the roadmap is actually to solve a specific problem and, you know, recommendations about how to change your mindset or your circumstances. And so each option has like about 10, 12 questions. Like, you know, if this was happening to somebody else, how would you describe it? You know, like, what do you know to be true? Like those kind of questions. And the machine learning layer that we built listens for emotion detection, about it decodes and detects emotion and voice. Because what I learned with the last company, and actually what other people who are still in the space, everybody's kind of doubling down on text for some reason. Than like texting your therapist, which is cool. I get it because it's convenient and cheaper, but it's the easiest way to disengage, you know, and you can edit a text. And real therapy, the way it was created, was about stream of consciousness thinking. Like the reason when you see the chaise lounge and the lying on the couch bit, that came because Freud designed it so that you lie on the couch, the therapist is behind you, so you're not looking at them, and you speak as if you're talking to God, you know, and a lot comes when you say it out loud and you kind of hear yourself verbalizing it because people work so hard to repress it. So I was just like, yeah, like, how can we, like, you know, reimagine that experience? Because now, you know, you go to an office and you're face-to-face. But the truth is, it's really hard to talk about difficult things with somebody looking at you, you know? And one thing I've learned just from the internet culture is this, that my favorite quote is, you know, if you want to get know a man's true face, give him a mask. And I definitely think there's something to that. So we're just kind of like really going straight to the source, you know, listening, kind of decoding your emotions and voice. And basically what we do is we have 30 minutes to answer all the questions. We take the audio recording. Our machine learning layer listens for, like, certainly, you know, signs of stress, you know, hesitation, things like that tell you a lot about what's going on. And also certain keywords like, you know, I hate my job or, you know, boyfriend problems, whatever. And we assign it to a therapist who specializes in the issue. And they get back to you with just a deep dive report, like kind of like, you know, the reason people love reading their horoscopes is because, like, you know, we all have an element of vanity and we just want to know, like, oh, are we going to be okay? How do I do this? You know, because I feel like therapy doesn't go far enough. Like, fine, you talk to somebody, but, you know, people get frustrated. That's why life coaches have kind of cannibalized the industry, because it's about action, you know, so what, now what? So with us, we're really about giving you actionable data to make a difference in your life and to help you think like a therapist. So it's more evolving, because I don't think therapy should just be about talking. I think it should be about learning. So yeah, so we're just going to test it. We already did a pilot. Now we're going to see what the ongoing model looks like. And yeah, I'm really, really excited. We've been demoing all week. My CTO is outside. So yeah, it's been good. I'm really excited.
If people do want to sign up, what website should I direct them to?
Yeah, so it's thedifference.co. And for now, we're going to be just sending it out to, like, friends and friends of friends so they can sign up to get on the wait list. But we'd love, love, love to get people who aren't, like, in our circle in for the official launch.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening. Two things before you take off. First, if you don't want to miss out on future episodes of Famous Failures, please subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. And be sure to leave a review on iTunes or Google Play. Second, if you'd like to join thousands of others who receive a short email from me each Thursday with a list of articles, books, tools, quotes, and other gems that help you discover how extraordinary thinking produces extraordinary results, you can text my first name, which is Ozan, that's spelled O-Z-A-N, to 345-345. So once again, that's my first name, Ozan, O-Z-A-N, to 345-345. Or if you're in front of your computer, you can head over to ozanvarol.com and drop your email address. If you act now, you'll also get a free ebook called The Contrarian Handbook, 8 Principles to Innovate Your Thinking. As always, thank you for listening and see you next time.